let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some ass.
Kia ora and welcome to Kick Arts with Emma and Stephen, proudly brought to you this month by our fabulous friends at the Dolphin Theatre. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show, brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcast, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz and check us out on Spotify. Now tonight we are chatting theatre with the team from the show Rehab. We're chatting books with author Kat Quinn, and we're heading to Oamaru to chat with Jemima about her future adventures to America. But to kick off the show, we heard from two listeners, Adam and Bray, all the way from New York, keen to promote their latest musical, Forest High and the Glitch in the System. So let's start the show with a track from their show called Perfect.
There's the essence of all of the world at the heart of a classroom. There's a kernel of all the potential that you could turn out to be. There's a hope in each crumb on the floor. There's a future just outside the door. And isn't it perfect? Perfect as it could be. There's a leak in the cracks on the ceiling of each little classroom. A responsible splash of the gas on the spark of young human beings. And there might be a hole in the wall, or the hint of a slant in the hall. And all of it's perfect, perfect as it should be. Perfect as textbooks and dog ears. Perfect as paint on your hands. Perfect as school bells and revelry. Nothing's as perfect to me. There's no canvas as blessed as a whiteboard inside of a classroom. Smudge is an old lesson learned. Every imprint a small footnote in history. And you are a part of this line, stretching back across the annals of time. And that makes you perfect, perfect as you can be. Perfect as pencils and scuff marks. Perfect as sketching freehand.
Forest High playing The Glitch in the System, a new musical by Adam and Bray. Thanks for sending it in, guys. Looks like you're doing fabulous stuff in New York. Keep sending it our way. Great start to the show, Emma.
I know, that was such a cool song.
Really cool. I'm really curious now about the rest of the musical.
Same.
Have to do some digging. Well, you and I have had a crazy week.
Yeah.
You've put on Newsies Junior and the Big 10 Junior in a week.
Yeah, it was a bit crazy.
Fabulous reviews. Absolutely outstanding.
Yeah, it was really full on. So, as we said to our listeners last week, we just got back from our Queenstown show in a week and straight into this one. So, 90 plus kids on the stage at West Point, and it was just, yeah, so worth it. Such hard work, but so worth it.
Yeah, totally paid off. Yeah, absolutely. And I'd like to say, are you slowing down now? But you've got some big festivals coming up.
Yeah, so we've got the Junior Theatre Festival is in 2.5 weeks' time. So that's got our 18 groups from across New Zealand and our first Australian group coming to join us, and our international guests. So that's pretty full on. Our two pilot programs, the big secret about the titles of those two musicals, but we've got 90 kids working on two brand new musicals with writers from America. So that's going to be amazing. So yeah, busy, busy time.
Busy.
Come November. I can exhale just like that.
Brilliant. Now, new month, we're well into October now, so a big thank you to the Dolphin Theatre who are back supporting us October and November.
Yes, thank you, the Dolphin Theatre. In fact, we're going to be going out for our sponsors shortly for next year. So if you're someone that would like to sponsor us for a month, we would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Now, back on the show, a bit of a return show, but new guests. And we're here to talk about the fabulous show Rehab. And welcome Carmen and Daughter, welcome to the show, team.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Great to have you here. Now, this is a repeat run for a show. It's been running many, many times. It's very popular, but is this your first time in it, or are you repeats as well?
Yes, we are both repeats. This will be my third season of Rehab. And I'm looking forward to it.
Third season, that's brilliant. What about you, Daughter?
It's my second season. I did the season at the Basement, and then they went on tour. They went on tour at Waiheke, and I wasn't able to make that one. So back on for my second season. Really excited, pumped to get back into it.
That's cool. All right, Carmen, tell us, what is Rehab all about?
Well, Rehab is a show that is really trying to educate people about substance abuse disorder and trying to destigmatize the disorder as it is, and to show everyone that it can afflict anybody. And I think there is this idea around alcoholism and addiction that people don't understand. You can't just stop. It's not just about willpower. There's so much more to it. And so the show is really aimed at bringing that message to people with a bit of humor, with a bit of emotional rawness, and just a bit of realness.
Brilliant. Daughter, is it scripted, or has this been devised, or is this verbatim? Where did the script come from?
So the show itself is improv, so it's not scripted, but we have, like, our scenes are scripted in the sense that they are
they're structured rather than scripted?
They're structured, as in we do the same settings of scenes. So we start with the morning meeting, we have group scenes, we go into a diary scene, a one-on-one counselling with the counsellor who Mark plays. So it's structured, but when we are actually in the scenes, it's all improv, which is really cool.
And it's quite a large cast, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, how many in total, roughly?
Oh, that's a tricky one.
Okay.
We've got quite a few people in our cast, but not everybody performs every season.
Okay.
And so it can vary from season to season as to how many of us are there.
And how did this first get born, if you like? What was the sort of the motivation to kick this off initially?
Well, Elizabeth Craycroft, she is she started it. It's her baby. She's the founder of Rehab as a show. She created it. And it's come really from her own journey in recovery. She's been in recovery for, I think, 14 years. Don't quote me. You'll have to ask Elizabeth. And she has been in rehab herself, and so she's really coming from that place of personal experience, experiences of others, of friends, and yeah, just wanting to spread the message.
And do you play specific roles or multiple roles between you?
Specific roles. So we have devised characters, and we've, you know, created and curated our characters over the last however many seasons you've been on the show. And I think we, you know, we have backstory that we're very familiar with, that we know really well. We know our characters really well. We know what makes them tick, what makes them happy, what makes them sad, what makes them in a good mood or in a bad mood. And we also know each other's characters really well. So
what does that mean if one of you say isn't going to be there? Does that mean someone else plays your character, or that character just doesn't appear?
No, that character doesn't appear in the show.
That's because you literally own your character.
Yeah.
I like that. So tell us about your characters then. Kick it off, Dorsha. Tell us about your character.
My character's name is Yasmin Nesim. So she is 19, Middle Eastern, and a high school dropout, really. And she, you know, picked up in high school when she was 14, and she, you know, has struggled with alcohol and with, you know, recreational drugs as well. And she's kind of someone who is lost, looking for direction, looking for purpose, feels quite hopeless at the moment. And so rehab for her is really like a grounding experience where she can, you know, kind of, it can be the light at the end of the tunnel for her.
Nice. Beautifully said. Beautifully said. Carmen, tell us about your character.
My character's name is Charlene. She is a teacher. She originally came from South Africa. She's an immigrant. And so part of her journey is dealing with being separated from everything, not having a support network, coming from a not a great home life originally, and then just sort of going from one really bad relationship to another, and then and the drinking is just what really causes that to happen. Really lots of poor decisions, and ultimately she hits a rock bottom and then has to go to rehab as part of the parenting order to get her daughter back.
Right. From a theatre point of view, having done it so many times now, do you refine it each time? Is there things that you take away and go, okay, before we do the next season or alliteration of this, we want to tweak this? Is this kind of rebirthed each time, or are you kind of going, no, we're locked and loaded?
I think the great thing about the show that's so different from everything else is we own the characters, as you said. We have, as the actors, we've got such a lot of input into who the characters are that we have license to kind of change their story, tweak it a little bit, or tweak their personality just a smidgen here and there. And that can kind of happen on the fly. And every single show is just so unique, so different. I don't think my character has been exactly the same with each show either. I mean, essentially, in essence, she's the same person, but, you know, she just changes it slightly.
'Cause am I right that originally the story was created from discussions with people in rehab? Like, they were verbatim sort of stories that kept, or at least created these characters?
The stories that we've, or rather the people that kindly came and spoke with us who are in recovery and told us these stories, we've also had sessions with counsellors who've worked in industry as well. We've learned about the co-popper around it all. So we've done a lot of work around that, and we've also gone to a few AA meetings just to observe, and it's been lovely that they've allowed us to be in that space with them. We don't take these stories necessarily. We hear them, we listen to them, we talk about the book, the big book, we say the serenity prayer ourselves, and we talk about the language of recovery, and then from that, that's where our stories come from. So our stories are really built around what we've heard about other people's experiences, but also about bits of our own lives that we can put into it.
Mm. So, I mean, you're dealing with some pretty heavy material too. So what kind of things have you maybe put around it for your own well-being, but also maybe for anyone in the audience that maybe is affected by it?
For our own well-being, I guess what we try and do is we try and make sure that as a cast we're really connected. We try to support each other. We do talk to each other. We make sure that we're all okay. And then, you know, we do have information and flyers that we hand out with every show. We do give the audience members the opportunity to talk to us about resources or things that they can do if they are interested. That's all part of the whole holistic show. It's not just about putting on a show, but it's about saying to these people, hey, this is fine. It's okay. It's okay to ask for help. And these are the things that you can do, and these are the places you can go. I have had people who have come to the show and said to me afterwards that they were just absolutely in tears because they identified so strongly with one character or another. One in particular said to me, I could see my brother there, you know, and he's passed away now, and he really struggled and he didn't have any help. And so it's really lovely to know that we are connecting with people on that level.
Definitely.
I was lucky enough to be in one of your first shows all those years ago in the audience, and I half watched the performance and half enjoyed the audience behind me because they were a group that had shared some stories with you. And they'd come in quite anonymously that night. It was one of your openings. But it was so gorgeous because as they worked out certain stories, characters or lingo they had given you, they got excited by their bits of story, but it felt really safe for them to see it, which I really loved. So it was a really unusual night as a theatre person sitting there going, I want to watch, but I want to listen behind me, because their reactions were just so beautiful and so honest. But also it gave some integrity to the show because they were going, they said that word for word, that's what I said to them, yay. And they were actually delighted that you had honoured that, which was really cool. And I guess, do you create new characters as people come and go from this? Are you gathering new stories, new info, because it has been a few years?
Well, I think that with the show, like, if we have a new actor that comes in to, and like someone to join the cast, then we introduce a new character, and that's always really fun because we get to know, you know, a new character. But
that's right what Dorsa said. So each person, each actor that joins our show gets to devise their character, and so they take from the stories that they've heard and they put that into kind of a melting pot of things, their own experiences of others. Some of our characters are quite close to who we are, and then others are not. And it just really depends on how comfortable we feel putting our lives into it. Because, of course, our friends and family, they come to the shows. And I remember my dad saying, oh, why did you portray me like that? And I said, well, Dad, it's not you. It's Charlene's dad.
Interesting.
So it's the new characters come from the actors that join us.
Have you noticed different audience reactions depending where you perform it? Like, your next block's on the Pump House on the Shore, but you've performed it in many different venues. Has that changed? You know, your audience reaction depending on where you are?
The audience have been really good, and they have all said similar things. They're always shocked that it's not scripted. They're always shocked that it's only partly devised, but mostly improv. And so they just, they're just, oh my gosh, really? That wasn't real? And so, and then some of them are so shocked and so pleased that they'll come back for the next show because they know it's going to be different, which is lovely. I think that overall, they've been pretty much the same so far.
Okay.
I'm hoping that this next season will be even bigger.
So if it's semi-improvised as you go, do you have key people or moments that sort of help get you back on track? So when a certain thing happens, you know we're now moving into the next scene or whatever, so that it doesn't become a 5-hour show.
A big help is definitely Mark, who plays Reg as our counsellor. if we're yapping too much, start talking too much, improvising too much, he'll like kind of draw the scene to a close or like make a comment so that we know. And there's also obviously like tech is really helpful because, you know, when we have our emogs, which is our every member of the group, we, you know, give a little bit of a idea of our characters, you know, the spotlight will help you.
Right.
Yeah, as well.
The light goes out, your time is up.
Yeah, at the basement, there was like a blinking red light that would tell us if we were getting way too close. And then, you know, kind of to wrap it up because, yeah, it's definitely difficult with improv. It's one of the biggest things that we work on is the timing to make sure that we get it right. Because in rehearsals, we're constantly being like, all right, that's time.
Mm.
And then when we get on stage, you don't have that. So, it's definitely, that's a tricky part for sure.
Brilliant. All right, we're going to take a short music break, and then after the break, we're going to find out more about these two and their arts journey that led up to doing the show. Now, Emma, I don't know if you have it on your social media, but my social media is going off at the moment with Chess opening on Broadway. My goodness, have they ticked the box for marketing?
Yeah, I've heard it's fairly phenomenal, but no, actually, you know what? Must have a different algorithm. I haven't clicked
Facebook
on it.
Facebook hasn't been listening enough.
No.
Well, here is the fabulous Leah Michelle with someone else's story from Chess on Broadway, which I think opened this weekend.
Long ago, in someone else's lifetime, someone with my name who looked a lot like me came to know a man and made a promise he only had to say, and that's where she would be. Lately, although her feelings run just as deep, the promise she made has grown impossible to keep. And yet, I wish it wasn't so. Will he miss me if I go? In a way, it's someone else's story. I don't see taking part at all. Yesterday, the girl that I was fond of finally could see the writing on the wall. Sadly, she realized she'd left him behind, and sadder than that, she knew he would. Nothing left to say. Would he listen if I stay? It's all very well to say, you fool, it's now or never. I could be choosing no choices whatsoever. I could be in someone else.
one of the best additions to that musical was when they added that song.
I know, and I think that you said going live extra loud because you were scared I was going to sing the last
note. I was. Definitely. My daughter is a long-haul flight attendant and recently went back to New York and caught a few shows, which was interesting. This one hasn't opened yet. Interesting, Emma, the favourite one of the last lot was Stranger Things.
Really?
She said next level. Even if you haven't watched the TV show, she said absolutely next level outstanding show.
Doesn't rock my boat.
Well, you might need to go and check it out.
Outside is still my favourite.
Nice. Awesome. All right, back to our two in the room, back here in the reality of Auckland. Not quite Broadway, but it is the Pump House. We're getting close. Beautiful venue. So Carmen and Dorsha, keen now to talk about your own arts journey. What kicked it off for you? Kick us off, Dorsha. When did it all start? Was it back in school days?
I think I did quite a bit of, you know, drama and musical theatre growing up in, you know, primary school. And then I took a bit of a gap. I don't think I did much in high school. And I got back into it when I was 17 and I joined an acting class, and actually Liz was in that class and she talked to me about the show, and I think I joined the cast when I was 18, which was really cool. But I was really new to improv. Like, that was my first... Ooh, yeah,
it's a challenge jump. Yeah.
It was so... It was definitely a big challenge. And, you know, especially this cast. I mean, joining this cast, it's a stacked cast, man. Like, everyone's really good. Like, some of these guys are really seasoned improvisers, and just, like, watching them in their craft is so, like... It's so captivating watching them. Like, when I came into rehearsals and I was just watching them run the scenes, I was like, wow, I can't believe this is improv. This is amazing. Like, it's so truthful. It's so honest. And I was like, I have so much to learn, but I'm so lucky that they're the ones that I get to learn from.
What has been the biggest challenge so far, do you think, for you as an actor in this show? Or the biggest learning?
The biggest learning of being on this show. I think being able to... you know, just let go of your ego a little bit, because being on this show, it is so funny, it's so hilarious, but it also gets very real, it also gets very raw, and, you know, we bring some of ourselves into our characters, and so sometimes, you know, during a scene, if the scene wants to go somewhere, you kind of have to just ride the wave and let it go there and not hold back too much, not have too much resistance. I think at the beginning, in the first couple of rehearsals, I was kind of like... I was struggling a bit because I had a lot of resistance, and I had to kind of learn to, ride the wave.
Interesting. Yeah, it's massive. Mm. Massive to go into such an adult show too, with adult themes. How did you feel sort of stepping into that sort of topic and environment when you're coming straight from high school?
Unworthy.
Really?
Yeah, because I thought as you say, it's such a heavy topic, and I... You know, as an actor, you want to do justice to the work that you're doing. And I think that I didn't have a deep understanding of addiction and of recovery. And I'd only known what people who have experienced it have told me. But I think talking through it with Elizabeth, who, you know, this show is based off of her lived experience, which is what makes it so beautiful and amazing to watch. But talking to her about it and attending recovery meetings was such a help, to sit in those recovery meetings and listen to people's stories. We read the books, you know, just today in rehearsal, we had the book and we put it, we sent it around the circle and we all read like a page, and it was so helpful to, you know, deepen your understanding on the experience of addiction and of recovery and how it feels to, you know, be in that.
It's crazy. 'Cause long form improv is so much different too. Like, Stephen and I have both for years obviously taught theatre sports, which is quite different when it comes to improv. But being a believable character living in a moment for such a long amount of time, that's so full on as well. Yeah. You have to know your characters so well.
Oh, yeah. Have you, as a young person, sort of made some choices from doing the show, gone, actually, this is where my future head sits around alcohol, drugs, etc.? Like, has it had that sort of impact on you?
Actually, yeah, it definitely opened my eyes to, you know, I think I personally don't drink, actually. And I find it really interesting how I think the culture around drinking is changing a little bit. Like, it's still big, but I have so many friends who also don't drink, and it's just because they, you know, they don't think they need it to have fun, and we can still have a really great night without, you know, the substances. And that was definitely a huge thing to have people come to the show and be like, yeah, like, it's not really a big thing for me. Like, I don't really drink much. I'm like, I feel like a couple years ago, like, not a couple years ago, but like,
there's been a shift.
Yeah, I feel like there's been a shift.
Do you think the show still appeals to young people then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, because I think that it's prevalent for everyone, right? Like, it's something that especially in New Zealand, I mean, drinking culture is so big. So whether you struggle with addiction or not, it's something that kind of forces you to think a little bit about, like, about how you know, take this thing, and is it something that you kind of is it something that you is it a glass a night, or is it maybe you know, leaning towards a little bit of a dependency? Is it leaning towards a little bit of like a, you don't like who you are without it? And that's maybe something where when you watch the show, it's something that you reflect on that maybe you otherwise wouldn't have reflected on.
Nice.
What about though, like, relation to, I know that you're predominantly talking about addiction to alcohol and drugs, but I suppose if you haven't experienced it, are you addicted to eating lollies or drinking fizzy drink? Like, was there another addiction that you could maybe have kind of twisted it to have that liked experience?
Man, yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, I think that we're in the age of dopamine, right? So everything you have, I mean, I know vapes were really big for me in high school, like, yeah, scrolling on your phone, man, that's a big one. I mean, that's another one that I had forced reflection with, and I was like, I have to stop. I have no energy ever. And like, and sugar, yeah, like you said, that's a huge one. I mean, there's all these little things. There's obviously the big ones that we consider to be a very detrimental addiction to have, but when you know, kind of have a wider lens, we see that there's a lot of things that, you know, are maybe harmful, and they're not helping you in your everyday life that maybe you want to take a step back from as well.
Now, obviously, being so young that you are, we haven't had a massive life journey in the arts yet, so I'm going to flip it. Where would you like to be in a few years' time? If we interview you in 5 years, what will you be doing in the arts space?
Oh, man. Anything.
Anything?
Anything.
You like performing is your number one?
Yeah, well... Yeah, I think performing will always be, you know, a part of my my life, and I think that, you know, theater and also screen and the arts and film, I think all of it will somehow be a part of my life. I mean, I don't know exactly where I'll stand in 5 years' time or how much I'll be chasing something, but I'm very happy to still have a part of it in my life, and I hope that in 5 years' time I think it will always be a part of my life, and so I'll totally be happy.
Brilliant. Brilliant. Great answers. All right, Carmen, you got to top that now. Take us back. When did the arts first kick off for you?
Hard to know. I did do a bit during primary school as well, way back. And, of course, I was living in Cape Town at the time, so I did music active, I believe is what it was called. And then for a while did nothing. Because over there, they don't have arts subjects necessarily at schools. It's more of an academic and sports focus. But when I moved to New Zealand, I immediately jumped into as many of those subjects as I could. So I jumped into photography and drama you know, started playing an instrument and did all the things that I could. So yes, did some plays at high school level, and then joined a theatre company and did a play with them. And then everything kind of stopped for a while, and I got married and had children and did the life thing.
Did the adulting.
The adulting thing. And then was separated and divorced and decided to I guess when we have these big changes, find out who I am and what I love, and of course I came back to my acting, and then I got involved with theatre again, and so I've done a few shows with Theatre Works in Birkenhead, which they are fabulous, by the way. Yeah, I did some shows with them, and I did the acting class as well, the same one that Dorsa did, and that's where we both met Liz.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and so going from there, I've done some screen work as well, and yeah, that was also my first venture into improv, so very daunting, but I think that with everything that I do in acting, I try and do something that challenges me. And so actually the newest thing that I've done that's challenged me is run the tech booth.
Okay.
Because I decided, yeah, I want to try something else that's going to challenge me. So everything that I do in theatre and in acting and just generally is a new challenge.
That is so cool. And is there a dream role or show that you would love to see produced that you would put your hand up and be in that audition room?
I would put my hand up for everything. I wish I could do it all the time. Unfortunately, that's not the case.
Very much your happy place.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thinking of the improv nature of the show, would there be, if someone walked in tomorrow into your rehearsal space, first time doing it, about to create a new character, what would be your sort of top three tips for them to handle the improv side? Like, I imagine listening's just as important as speaking when you're in your sort of show, to hear what each actor is saying. What would be your top three tips?
I think the most important tip would be to listen to the offer that's coming your way from the person that you are acting with. Because I think so often we are trying to think ahead with a response before we've even heard what's come our way. And in improv, the most important thing is actually responding to what's been given. So we need to be aware of that. I think so that's the first one. The second one is to not be afraid of allowing a pause. Empty space is just as important as talking.
Especially a show like that where the audience just sometimes needs a second to catch their breath on it. Yep. Okay. Third tip, lucky last.
Third tip is know the feeling that you're having and just sitting in it. Just recognizing it and sitting in it. And then riding the wave, like Dorsa says, which then comes from that.
Do you have any rituals that you do at the end of the night to sort of leave your character behind as you hop in your car?
I make sure that I hug all of my cast members. Sometimes some high fives and just congratulate everybody for a great show and then leave the dressing room.
Nice. Brilliant. All right. Rehab is on from the 22nd to the 25th of October at the Pump House Theatre. All the details are up on our Kick Arts bulletin page, but you can also head to pumphouse.co.nz. And Carmen, they have a pay what you like arrangement.
Yes, they do. So from $12, pay what you like.
That's fantastic. So go and support them 22nd to the 25th of October. Thank you both for coming in and sharing this story, your story and the journey and what's a very personal story, but also after a long day of rehearsals. We appreciate it.
Thank you so
much for having us.
All the best for a fabulous season. Now, Emma, Bic Runga is back. One of my favourite all-time performers with a new track just released 2 days ago. It's called It's Like Summertime. And she's back, Bic Runger with It's Like Summertime. But man, Emma, that still had Bic's vibe, eh?
Yeah,
like
definitely.
That could easily have been a song from 20 years ago.
Yeah, it could have been, actually. It had quite a kind of beachy 80s vibe,
yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah, good on you. All right, well, from those fabulous guests talking about this show to now a fabulous guest talking about their latest book, which is a collection of stories. Treasury of Kiwi, the Kiwi Treasury. I hope I said that right. Welcome to the show, author Kat Quinn.
Kia ora.
Great to have you here, Kat, and what a beautiful book.
Thank you so much.
I'm stealing it for my niece, who's just had a baby 6 weeks premature and is going through a bit of a tough time. So the book is going to be the first gift on their table.
Oh, that's really special.
So tell us about this character you've created.
So Kiwi the Kiwi, I created her about 10 years ago. It was when I had a toddler and a little girl in tow. So it was the story of a mum kind of struggling with early motherhood. So there's not many characters that are kind of the protagonist is a female mum, but Kiwi's a little bit like me and a little bit clumsy and kind of working things out as she goes.
And did the name Kiwi come from the good old, like my grandmother used to call me that way. She used to go, Kiwi!
Yeah, so it was exactly that. And I also just wanted a word that wasn't out there. So I did a bit of research and made sure that, because I've got a lot of te reo in my book, so I wanted to make sure that it worked well with te reo, but it also wasn't a Māori word, just so that there wasn't any kind of conflicts or issues with existing words.
Now, you wrote the story, but did you also do all the beautiful illustrations?
Yeah. So I was an illustrator before I started writing the Kiwi books, illustrating books for other authors. And then this was the first series that I kind of sunk my teeth in and got writing myself.
I just love, I think the thing that stands out to me the most is Kiwi's eyes. They're so real.
Oh, thank you. So I always say to kids when I'm talking about character design and that kind of thing that the key is actually looking at what your face is doing, emotions. So those looks in the book are all things when I'm frustrated with my kids, I'll look at what my face is doing. So it's kind of, it's one of those tricks that is really important is to actually look at what your facial features are doing when you're having different emotions, and that helps to convey that emotion through your artwork.
I think, too, the difference between, you get a double fold page that is so full of colour, and then you turn the page and the next second you've got the whole white background behind it, and like the contrast and the impact of that is just outstanding.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's kind of, I like to add lots and lots of detail in there, because when I was little and my parents were reading me books, I needed kind of to have my interest piqued the whole time. So those full page spreads have lots of little Easter eggs and things in there, lots of hidden detail. But then your brain needs a little bit of a breath. So the next page is generally white with smaller detail and more emotive pictures.
So this particular book has five of your existing books, I'm going to call them. So what was it that drove you to decide to put it into a treasury?
So it's, like I said before, it's been 10 years. So it's actually our 11th year this year. So I'd done the five books over those 10 years and kind of felt like the last book that I did, Kiwi's Flui Hui, it felt like it was finished to me. So I'm not going to guarantee that I won't write another Kiwi book, but it was kind of that Kiwi's not a toddler anymore. So we kind of stepped into a different phase. So I also found that a few of my fans from the beginning were starting to get to that age where they were having babies. So my first fan from back 11 years ago came to one of my my events and said that she'd just had a little baby. So that was kind of a moment where I went, oh, wow, this is actually time to make something for those original fans, for the next generation of readers.
I love too that you've taken that time to, in the front of this particular book, to kind of talk a little bit about your process and how you go about doing it.
Yeah, I think it's really important now, especially with AI art and that kind of thing, to show, you know, that there's quite a process behind doing a book. And and if you don't have that kind of evidence now, it's hard to know exactly where your work is coming from. So I think that would be something I'd say to other artists and illustrators, is just make sure you document your process and that kind of thing.
So how long would it take you to make, like, the, I know you said that it was over 10 years, but how long is one, does it take for one book to be illustrated and put together?
So I never really tracked my hours because it's a bit scary when you start doing that. But I did do a time lapse of one of my spreads. So one of the spreads from Kui's First Egg, I time lapsed it and it took over 40 hours for one spread. Yeah, so a full working week. And the way that I work too is we've got educational contracts and things that we do through my business, and then quite often I'm doing the books at night time when the kids have gone to bed, or early in the morning before they get up. So it's I try not to track my hours too much because it'll make you cry.
But is the creating of something like this, I know that you're, it's kind of part of your job as well, but is it kind of like the generation that picked up colouring books again, and for you know, that kind of well-being feeling of, do you get that when you're creating your pictures?
Yeah, I really love it. I feel very lucky to be able to do this as my job, but also it really is like my dream book that I get to make myself. So when I had that toddler and I was looking for books to read to her, there was a few really amazing New Zealand authors that I'd always go to, but I also wanted something that did have a female character, and and kind of the mum character really worked for where I was at my journey as a parent.
Now, you've also used the book as a fundraiser for the Save the Kiwi Foundation, raising over $70,000. You know, is this something you set out from the beginning to do, or did that kind of just come from the birth of the character?
It was really important for me, actually. So when I first thought of the idea for the book, one of the first things I did was approach a few publishers and kind of said to them, I really would like to raise funds from the profits of this book for a charity. And it used to be Save the Kiwi, but now used to be Kiwis for Kiwi, and it's now Save the Kiwi. So I said to them that I was really keen to give maybe 20 cents or something like that from the sale of each book. And a lot of them kind of were a little bit worried that that's a bit much, because there's not a huge amount of profit in books. But it was something I felt really strongly about. So that was part of my kind of driver to find my own printer and do it myself. So, that was a really important part of it for me. My dad was in conservation when I was young, so he always talked to us about the importance of conservation and, predator control and that kind of thing. So, it was really important to me, and it's something I'm really proud of and stoked that I kind of fought for in the beginning as well.
Mm. So take us back when, you know, you mentioned the illustrations came first from a career point of view. When did you first decide, actually, I want to be an author as well as an illustrator?
Yeah, so I'd been illustrating for about 10 years when I was driving actually to an author named Auntie B. She was the original author behind Wanda Taniwha and the song Umarapiti.
Ah.
So she's amazing. And I was driving there and I had this idea of Kui's First Egg, and I got to her house and said to Auntie B, you know, I've got this idea for a book and would you consider maybe writing it and I could illustrate it? And she said, you've got the story there, just put it down and give it a go. It really was, I have to say thank you to Auntie B. She's passed away now, but she was the kind of the fire under my bum to do it myself.
Love it. And what's on the future? Is there more stories to come? Is there a Treasury Volume 2 on its way?
I can't say that there isn't going to be another Kui book, but there is definitely going to be more books. So I've got a few ideas for the Kui and Friends range, so it might be a little another native creature of some kind, and definitely within that world. So I've got a few things up my sleeve.
Did you see on the news, was it, I think it was last week or the week before, the white kiwi that was...
Yeah, wasn't that so cute? Yeah, so amazing. And we are, like, it is really cool. People are seeing more kiwi. Since the time when I first started 10 years ago till now, there is just more sightings out in the world. Like, we can see that there has been a change in the population of kiwi, especially in some areas where you're seeing them out more, and that's pretty exciting, I reckon.
I remember having a very little four-year-old half asleep in the back of the car and driving home through Titirangi in Auckland and seeing a kiwi literally in the middle of the road and pulling over and waking her up and going, no, this is something you just need to see, because it's not every day you're going to see a kiwi just wandering the street. It was so cool.
Yeah, that is so special.
So where can people pick up your beautiful book from?
So it is available at most bookshops throughout New Zealand. We also have a website where they can purchase them, and all good bookshops.
And what's your website? Go on, give it a plug.
Illustrated.co.nz.
Amazing. Thank you, Kat, for talking to us, and thank you to Karen for organising you to come on tonight. She's a good supporter for our show. It's a beautiful book. As I said, the one you kindly sent us is off to a very good home. We wish you well with the book and hope that the sales are big and keep supporting your fabulous charity work as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Cool. Have a good rest of your Sunday night.
You too. See you later.
Now, Emma, some sad news this week in the news. Patricia Routledge passed away.
I know. Mrs. Bouquet.
Mrs. Bouquet, amongst many things. So she played so many, many roles, including a very famous Mother Superior. Patricia Routledge, and if you look up on YouTube, Climb Every Mountain, you'll see a beautiful photo montage that takes you through the many characters she played, from very serious to hilarious comedy roles. Yes, certainly my favourite, and I'm sure yours, is the wonderful Mrs. Bouquet.
Very cool.
All right, time to take a music break while we get our next guest on the line, all the way from the deep south. I wonder if it's cool down there tonight. Sam Cullen and Brody Lee have released a new song. It's called Home to You.
Remember you were always shouting down the phone,
and you'd only buy the cheapest alcohol,
drink it so fast inside the corner of these walls,
till I stumble and you say you'll take me home.
Put on your blanches, it's fine, dear, I'm wide awake. What you say in this time tonight?
And Brody Lee, Home to You. Check out their official music video. It's up on YouTube and definitely worth a look. Good guests of Kick Arts, those two.
Yeah, lovely to see them working together.
Absolutely. Now we are heading to the bottom of the South Island now. Emma, who have you got on the line for us now?
Wow, this young performer has actually come across my path in a number of ways now, but most importantly, we're going to be talking about her trip to America. So welcome to Kick Arts, Jemima. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
Very good. Now, you've just finished a very big holiday program.
Yeah, I have. My stage club.
So tell us a little bit about stage club and why you started this.
All right, so Stage Club, well, it's been an idea and a dream for a while, but the reason why I started Stage Club is because earlier this year, my mum found this amazing opportunity for me, International All-Stars, and I auditioned for it, and I got in. I'll explain more about All-Stars soon, but yeah, so that's leading me to New York next year, and it's a huge travel expense, huge expense. And so we thought, oh, hang on, why don't we just turn Stage Club into a reality? And so Stage Club, it's a holiday program for children aged through primary years and intermediate years. And what it is really, It's fun, theatre-based games and activities, mostly for confidence building.
Fantastic. And how many people were working with you on that, or were you looking after the kids by yourself?
I was the main caretaker of the children, but my mum was in the room in the background for all of the sessions. So it was mainly me and my mum.
How fantastic. What a cool fundraiser.
Yeah, thank you.
And what did the stage club end with? Did you have a little bit of a showing for your parents and everything?
Not really a showing, no, because I'm going to be doing stage club again in the summer holidays, and so I think I'll do more of a showcase then. But this holidays, it ended, we did a little within stage club showcase for any parents that were waiting outside. They can come in and watch. It was really just a 10-minute showcase of all the games that we did
now
over the 2 weeks.
Can we just remind our listeners, how old are you?
I'm 16 years old.
Because this is a pretty impressive, A, way to spend your school holidays, but B, way to raise some funds as well. What was your biggest learning from the week, being a 16-year-old having to put a week like that on?
Oh, my biggest learning was there's actually quite a lot of difference between children of different age groups mm-hmm. and children with obviously different interests and backgrounds. All of them there obviously love the stage to some degree and love performing in some sort of way, whether it's dance, singing or acting, or whether they're completely new and curious. But my biggest learning was I had quite a lot of five-year-olds over the holidays, and my oldest kid there was about 13. So I had a huge range of ages. And my biggest learning curve, I think, was finding ways to keep everyone engaged through their age ranges. And I've managed to do that. The first day was definitely tricky because I hadn't done that before, but it got easier and easier over the 10 days. And yeah, no, I've learned a lot about children, actually. Like, still myself being one, but mm-hmm. I've learned a lot about people. Yeah.
Amazing. Now, you've been doing some other fundraising as well with your artwork. So tell us a little bit about that.
All right. So when I was 12 or 13 in lockdown, pretty boring time for everyone. And so I decided, you know what? I'm going to be doing a drawing a day. And this is where my brand, my business, Jemima Did It, grew. We called it Jemima Did It. Jemima Did It because, you know, I did a drawing every day. And so that brand has grown over time. But as part of my fundraising, I'm selling my original drawings on cards and tea towels at my mum's shop, Ink Design Store. And recently I've made a new illustration titled Little Kiwi, Big Apple. It's a cute little illustration of a tiny little kiwi half staring up at a massive big red apple holding a coffee cup because, you know, New York coffee.
Stunning.
That's so good. So tell our listeners a little bit about this trip coming up. What is all the things you're going to be up to?
Oh my goodness. Okay, so this trip, organised by Travel Gang, International All-Stars Program. So this trip is taking me to New York in early January next year. And what I'll be doing is I'll be training with 32 other young performers like myself in Broadway studios in New York with Broadway trained professionals. So that exciting experience will be over 9 days. We'll be learning, I think it's an original musical, I think, over 9 days, perfecting it as an ensemble. And then we're all going to hop on a plane together as a troupe, and we're going to go to the Atlanta, Georgia Junior Theatre Festival International, and we are performing this musical or number of pieces as an ensemble on the Junior Theatre Festival stage.
That is so cool. I can hear the excitement down the phone line. Emma, I suddenly want to be 16 again.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a pretty amazing trip.
Now, has Oamaru always been home for you?
Yeah,
that's
pretty
home.
Much. I moved to Oamaru when I was about 7, so yeah.
About 7, and you're a student at St. Kevin's. So a certain teacher of yours, Mr. Devereaux, is listening, so no pressure here, but tell us a little bit about your what sort of arts programs and things do you do within school?
Within school, I've been participating in school musicals for the past 3 years. First one, I was actually in the band. Second one, I was co-leads with an amazing peer of mine, Oki Jamieson. She's amazing. That was in a musical called That's Life. I was cast as Sarah. And this year, for our school musical, we did Susical, the musical, and I played the role of the sour kangaroo, which was such an ecstatic role. Man, that character has a lot of voice to use.
Sure does. And I'm going to let you in on a little secret, Jemima, and that is that the musical That's Life was actually written by Stephen, who's talking to you right now.
What?
Yeah, I flew down for your opening.
Stephen was fabulous. In the audience.
You were fabulous. Yeah. Yeah, that's a very special show to my heart. So delighted that a Sarah from That's Life is travelling over to the Big Apple. That is so cool.
Oh.
What's your long-term goal? Where would you like to be? If we interview you in 10 years' time, when Emma and I are still sitting here doing these interviews, where will you be? What will you be doing?
Oh, man. Visualizing myself in 10 years is something really hard for me because I've got a lot of goals and aspirations, but no plan. I'm keeping that fluid for now, but what I really want to be doing in 10 years is inspiring others as others have inspired me. And that was the point of Stage Club, really. Going back to Stage Club, the last two sessions were actually really hard to manage because the children just grew so much confidence over the 2 weeks, which is what I wanted. So a win is a win. But that's really what I want to be doing in 10 years, inspiring others as others have inspired me.
That's fantastic, because you've also been a part of Music Theatre Oamaru for a number of years. In fact, this year, earlier, just a few months ago, you played the Artful Dodger in Oliver.
Yeah, I did.
So how do you see, like, is your community down in Oamaru quite supportive of the arts?
Yes, they are. I'm so lucky here. Yeah, they're really supportive.
And have you, do you know anyone in the arts outside of your town? Like, is this going to be quite a big thing, meeting some other people further afield?
Yes, it will be quite a big thing. I mean, I know some of the International All-Stars kids just via Instagram. We have a group chat now, which is quite cute. But otherwise, I don't know anyone, aside from you, Emma, but I don't know anyone else out there.
That's fantastic. Well, that's so cool that you're getting this opportunity and you're going to meet so many people. Like, should we tell everyone that at Atlanta there's about 8,500 musical theatre people?
What?
Oh, did you not even realise that? Sorry.
No.
We're just rocking her tonight with all the secrets.
We're telling her so much information that she didn't know. Yeah, there's about 8,500 people going to be in Atlanta with you.
What?
So that's going to be really cool. And then after Atlanta, because this trip's a little bit different to the other All-Star trips that Travel Gang do, because you can travel on the other trips without your parent, because they provide chaperones. But with this one, you have to go with your own parent. So has Mum and you got anything planned for after Atlanta? Other than a really long flight home, which you'll probably sleep through the whole thing. You'll be so tired.
Are we thinking about it on the way home? After Atlanta, no, not all that was planned. It's my brother's birthday shortly afterwards. But before Atlanta and New York, I am competing in the PACAND's National Young Performer Awards later this month in Palmerston North.
Wow.
And what do you have to do for that performance?
For that performance, oh, there's so many rules. It's quite hard to think about, actually. But for this, I have to perform two pieces of scene leading into song of chosen characters. I have chosen The Artful Dodger from Lionel Bart's Oliver, and I have chosen Lorelei Lee from Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, which is definitely a contrast. So not much happening after Atlanta except for probably another round of Stage Club. But before, there's a bit to plan for.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Yeah. So if people wanted to support you, what could people outside of Oamaru do? Because obviously there's a lot of people that probably can't come into the art store to buy your books, your tea towels, I should say. But how can people get maybe hold of your tea towels? Or have you got to give a little? Like, what can people do that want to support you?
I do have a give a little. It's called Support Jemima's Musical Theatre Training in New York. So that give a little is online. And I've had so many generous donations so far. I'm so grateful for all of the support I've received. It's genuinely so lovely.
Because you've had not just people giving to your give a little, you've got a couple of grants as well, didn't you?
Yes, I have. NGO has been so generous. They gave me a lovely grant. And the Ruby Maris Trust, a local trust for the performing arts, they've given me an amazing, generous grant as well. I'm so lucky.
Cool, fantastic.
That is brilliant. Well, we wish you every success and congratulations on everything that you're doing. As a young person in the arts, you are on the right track for success. Stay in touch with us. We can promote your next holiday program when you've got all the details up and running. And you have one job tomorrow back at school. You've got to go up to Mr. Devereaux, give him a high five from Stephen and Emma. Mr. Devereaux has been taught by both of us. We've worked with him on shows and he's even sat in this chair and covered us when we're away. So he's a very special person in our world. So tell him tomorrow when he's having his cup of Barry's tea to think of Emma and Stephen.
And I'm putting the give a little right now on our Kick Arts page. So hopefully that might encourage some people to maybe throw their coffee money tomorrow your way to help you get to New York.
Thank you. And thank you so much for your time today. I'm really grateful to have this experience.
It's a pleasure. Go well. Take care, Jemima. Have a great week back at school.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good night. Now, last night, Emma Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, closed at the Civic Theatre in Auckland after its mammoth season.
And what a trip it was for them all.
It was. Man. It was huge. And a beautiful new version has come out of MacArthur Park, which is a song sung well-known in the show from Mika McLaurin and Amber Riley. Here is MacArthur Park.
Step ahead.
Oh my goodness, you need to check out that video online on YouTube. Mika McLaren and Amber Riley with MacArthur Park. And well done to everyone involved in Priscilla. Shows that size at the Civic's not easy to put on, so congratulations to everyone involved.
It's amazing. I was boogieing along big time to that track.
Now, Emma, the theatre list has come in. What's happening in Auckland?
Well, it feels like there's a lot happening in Auckland. Now, there's our friends at the Dolphin Theatre, who, as we've said, are our sponsors this month with the Atom Room. Now, we spoke to them a few weeks ago. So that is running in through till the 18th of October at the Dolphin Theatre. And that, of course, is about the futuristic threesome. It sounded pretty cool to go to. So Sarah and Danny live in Wellington, 150 years in the future, where climate change, tectonics, shifts and nuclear accidents have wrecked the environment. I'm not going to tell you much more about it, but it sounded and pretty cool when we interviewed them.
Brilliant. Now, Waiheke is back on stage with Stones in His Pockets, a fast-paced tragicomedy set in a small community in rural Ireland where filming of a Hollywood movie takes over the town. The local extras become our stars and the stars become extras. The play explores the theme of how big money and cultural misalignment combine with tragic consequences. This two-handed script requires two actors to perform as 15 distinct characters, switching through gender, age, nationality and voice with minimal costume change. It's a story of friendship, sorrow, laughter and ultimately hope. It's playing from the 9th to the 18th of October at the Artworks Theatre in Waiheke. Head to artworkstheatre.org.nz for all the details.
Now the Mischief Company have Fizz Live Comedy. Think Whose Line Is It Anyway? But live, local and bursting with mischief. It's a hilarious night of improv madness, fueled by your wild suggestions. It plays most Fridays, in fact, the 3rd, the 10th and the 31st of October, and they have a special Christmas show on the 14th of October at the Vic in Devonport. Check it out at www.thevic.co.nz/movie/fizz/
Oh my goodness.
Effervescence-improv. Just go to the Vic.
Go to the Vic, absolutely. Hey, good luck to Waikowhai Intermediate, who are staging Bugsy Malone. That, I have not seen that show probably since I directed it in my early 20s. How cool is it? I hope they have the cream pies. It's the best bit about Bugsy Malone. It's on from the 14th to the 16th of October at Waikowhai Intermediate School in Mount Roskill. Grab your tickets from the school.
Now, Auckland Live and Auckland's Writers Festival has Trent Dalton's Love Stories. So Love Stories invite audiences into Dalton's world, a city corner, a battered Olivetti typewriter and a single question posed to strangers passing by. Can you please tell me a love story? From strangers to soulmates, parents to children, friends to lifelong companions, the stories collected and celebrated in this remarkable production traverse the full spectrum of human love. Check this out, 16th to the 19th of October at the Civic Theatre in Auckland City. Of course, tickets from AucklandLive.co.nz.
Phoenix Theatre are back with The Pink Hammer, a hilarious Kiwi comedy that truly nails it, where laughter meets power tools in Takapuna. Four women sign up for a cozy ladies-only carpentry class, only to be met by Woody, a grumpy, newly single builder who would rather work alone. Undeterred, they charm their way into the workshop, sparking a whirlwind of handsaw mishaps, baking disasters, and razor-sharp banter. This sounds hilarious. It's on from the 30th of October to the 8th of November at the Pump House, where you can grab the tickets.
Now, the rest of the things down here in November, so we could probably leave them, Stephen.
Yeah, absolutely. But make sure you sign up to the Theatre List at thetheatrelist.com. Register your events if you've got something coming up so that they can get that information out. But of course, we're a national show. Email us info@kickarts.org.nz and we can make sure our bulletin page has all the details.
Now, this week, we're going to see a show together.
We are. Now, this very special Jackie Clark.
Yeah, Songs for Nobody. So, Jackie playing five different little, I was going to say vinaigrettes, but they're not vinaigrettes, are they? They're vignettes. That's the
vignettes.
One. Of people who have met a famous singer. And yeah, that's on at the Pump House, and that's being done by Tadpole Productions. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing that. And there's a few other shows coming up for us to go and see as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's starting to get busy again. All right, well, we're going to close the show now. What a great show it's been. Our friends, Flora Falls, always emailing us with their latest songs. They're travelling the globe. I think they're back in Australia at the moment. I keep nagging them to come and visit us down under. Here is their latest track. It's called Shake the Tide. Have a fabulous week and make sure you
kick some arts.
It's already 5 years since I left home. I missed Grandpa's funeral and the birth of your son. I sent you a postcard, I wrote you a song. I tried to be present, I tried to be strong.
Said you crashed my car. There was a time, I swear, when we would have talked. Now we're 15,000 miles apart. In the beginning, never seemed so far. I'll track through water to be by your side. We could start again, we could start again.
Brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be here.